There are those who have pointed out that certain mitzvos have mazel, and other mitzvos have less mazel. I think it's true of Mishnayos as well. We know that Asei Lecha Rav, Uknei Lecha Chaver, that works very well. Certainly something that's felt much in the Beis Medrash. But the end of that Mishnah reads, V'havidan et kol ha'dam l'kav suchos. It's very difficult for us to be down the kaf suchos. And I want to suggest tonight three reasons why it is very difficult for us to be down the kaf suchos. It's a very shocking Gemara in Shabbos. And I speak often about the subject of disabilities. I'll mention a little further in, I have a son with a disability. I often speak in different communities about this issue. There is a shocking Gemara, which many of you know about David HaMelech, which suggests that because David HaMelech may have accepted Lashon Hara about a man named Mephibosheth, so for that reason, the Malchus of David, the empire in the state of Israel, was split into two. This very shocking Gemara maybe the first clue why it's so difficult to be Dan Lekav Suchos. For those of you who know the story, Mephibosheth is the son of Yonatan, David's best friend. David and Yonatan made a pact, whatever happens, whoever becomes king, we're going to take care of your descendants. And David HaMelech, once he establishes his reign in Shmuel Bet, he decides to look for a descendant of Shaul. So everybody thinks he's going to kill him, of course. Siva comes up, he says, is there anybody who's left from Beit Shaul? And nervously, somebody comes up and says, there's one guy, but don't worry, he's a cripple. His name is Mephibosheth. He had become crippled after his father was killed in the ensuing chaos. He was dropped by his babysitter when they were trying to run him out of the palace, and he became crippled. Siva says, there is one descendant, but you don't have to kill the guy. The guy's a cripple. David says, bring him to me. This poor fellow is terrified. And David says to him, I don't want to kill you. I want to do chesed to you. I love your father. He was my best friend. So David HaMelech takes this individual, this stranger to him, and he sits him at his table. He returns all of the properties of Beit Shaul to Mephibosheth. This guy goes from living a life of fear, probably, a life of hiding. Suddenly he's at the top of the world. David HaMelech does an unbelievable thing. Who would do that to the family of the king that preceded him? And then things get bad. Avshalom decides to raid the palace. We know that David doesn't want a civil war. And everyone runs away, probably deja vu from Mephibosheth. Everybody runs away from the palace again, this time David's palace. Everybody except Mephibosheth. And Siva, who is the servant, the caretaker for Mephibosheth, comes to David. He runs after David. And David says, where is Mephibosheth after all? The one I took care of, where is he? And Siva says, well, he decided to stay with Avshalom. Siva lies. And it seems that David accepts the lie. David says, all those properties that I transferred to Mephibosheth, the whole house of Shaul, that goes to you now, Tziva. You stand by me. The war ends. David HaMelech returns to Yerushalayim, and there at the gates of the city attests the Navi. There at the gates of the city is Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth hasn't taken a shower, he hasn't shaved, he's been in Avelos since David left the city. And David sees him and David says, very interesting words, Lama lo halachta imi, Mephibosheth. Why did you not walk with me? Mephibosheth says, I don't walk so well, I got left, I got deserted. Look at me, I'm in Avelos. And strangely, and of course, any story that we're judging David HaMelech, we have to take with a grain of salt. What does it even mean? How could David have made such a mistake? At his, whatever it means, David HaMelech says, I don't know what to do. I don't know whether Tzivah's telling the truth and you deserted me. I don't know if you're telling the truth. The best deal is those fields, yachleku. Split the fields in half. And at that moment, says the Gemara, it was destined that David's melucha would be split in half. And that in the days of his grandson, the kingdom would be torn apart. It is so difficult to understand what this Gemara means, and it is so difficult to understand how David could have made the mistake. It's so difficult to judge David on his level. But what seems to be going on is that a person that David HaMelech had done tremendous chesed to was suddenly being accused, was suddenly being charged by David. In fact, it might have on some level made it confusing for him. How could someone that I did such chesed to desert to me? But the real question is, how could someone that David had been so kind to, now somehow he was not quite as kind? Some of the people in the room are counselors in HASC. In my old days, I did HASC for 10 years. And we actually left HASC because we had a son that was too difficult for them to take care of in HASC. I went from being a counselor to being a parent. I remember getting up the first time and speaking to the counselors after our son had been diagnosed with autism. And I said to the counselors, you know, it's an amazing thing. I worked here also. And I did my chesed. I think it was a lot of, I mean, it's 10 years of working in camp. And yet, I had never truly thought about what it meant to be in the shoes of somebody else. I said, you know, it's amazing. I've been a counselor here for 10 years. It never occurred to me what happens to these kids and their families when they go home. It just never occurred to me. There are probably guys out here who did HASC, who did Yach, who did something much better than I. It never occurred to me that if it was so difficult for me to watch this child for 7 weeks, what in the world do the parents do the rest of the year? Suddenly I was a parent. And I realized that there's a huge difference between doing chesed for somebody and thinking chesed, thinking about where a person is, truly understanding what it's like to be in somebody else's shoes. David HaMelech did chesed to Mephibosheth. He was almost a chefetz of a mitzvah. But at some level and in some way, the story seems to indicate that when it came time to truly understand what it meant to be Mephibosheth, to be somebody else, that's a lot harder. It lies at the root of chesed. Rav Wolbe points out that the first step in becoming a Baal chesed is not to do anything. That's the comforting part of it. You don't have to do anything if you want to be a Baal chesed. You just have to think chesed. You have to meet people and try to understand what's it like to be them, right? We're told that when we give tzedakah, we have to give tzedakah to make up for what a person needs. Right? Rashi there says, even if the guy needs a sus to ride on and an eved to follow him. The guy comes to your door, he's dressed in rags, he's dressed in sloppy clothes. He says, how much, you know, can I help you? Oh, come in, have a cup of tea. What do you need? I need $46,700. Why? Because I need to buy a Lexus. You need a Lexus. I don't have a Lexus, so I got to buy you a Lexus. Revolvi doesn't say Lexus. But he's basically, that's the idea. This guy needs a Lexus. What do I have to pay so he can have a Lexus? But he used to drive a Lexus. And he used to be a big shot. And he lost his job. And every time he gets into his little Honda Civic, all due respect to anybody who drives a Civic, every time he gets into to drive his Honda Civic, the guy feels like a nobody, and it's mamish embarrassing for him. And it reminds him and everybody else that he's not who he used to be, and he doesn't have a job anymore. And Rav Wolbe points out, if there are three guys waiting at the door, and one doesn't have food, and one needs an operation for a kidney, and one guy needs a Lexus, you don't give it to the guy with the Lexus. But in theory, what the Torah is telling us is that what it means to do chesed is to put oneself in somebody else's shoes. To actually think of what it would be like to be them. And that's so much harder. I mentioned to one of the smicha classes a few weeks ago, something I always try to say when I'm speaking on behalf of parents. When my son was younger, he's large now, really large. My son, younger son, my older son, who's smaller, but is laughing because he's really large now. So we used to, for the sake of keeping track of him, we used to put him in the shopping cart, in the main part of the shopping cart. He wouldn't fit in the little kiddie part anymore. He couldn't stick his legs through that thing. But he was small enough to still put in the main part of the shopping cart, which meant that a lot of what you were buying was eaten by the time you got to the front. But okay, at least he didn't run away. So you get to the front, you're standing on line, and he's going after all the candy. You know, that little thin area there where you're kind of like in the runway there to get out, and there's magazines and there's things, and he's grabbing everything. And it's very hard not to think about what everyone else in the supermarket is thinking. Because if I'm standing behind me, if I'm the guy three people behind me, what am I thinking? What lousy parents. Oh my, you know, what parent would allow their child to do this? To scream, to run, to do this? What kind of parent is this? So what am I going to do? Do you know how many times, and I mention this when I speak on behalf of parents, do you know how many times I wish I could buy a button that says, we're not bad parents, he's autistic? Can't say that. But you learn that when the kid's having a tantrum, or when somebody acts out, or when a lot of things happen, it's very hard to stand in somebody else's shoes. And the first problem that we have with being Dan Lekav Sechus is the real ability to look beyond our situation. I think as a shul rabbi, your eyes are opened to the fact that life is not idyllic. Had a number of students, fourth year students, go last week and this week to Ohel. Last week to meet with adults who were suffering from bipolar disorder. From guys, and what it's like to have bipolar disorder. Today we went to a case conference of a family going through a divorce. And it was eye-opening to the students. Unfortunately, it wasn't that eye-opening to someone who has to be a rabbi of a shul, who has to see this stuff. You begin to learn after a while that a lot of stuff is going on in a lot of people's lives. There's no such thing as an ordinary day. There's no such thing as an ordinary situation. There's no such thing as a person who didn't have a lousy experience that morning. And that's maybe why they're acting the way they're acting. That's number one. And maybe on some level, that's where David HaMelech failed. But there's another reason why we're not Dan Lekav Sechus, and I wouldn't dare attribute this to David, but I think we suffer from this. But Wolbe points out that at the core of being Dan Lekav Sechus, interesting, listen to this, at the core of being Dan Lekav Sechus is actually when you see something and you see somebody doing something that seems to be wrong, or somebody did something to you that seems to be wrong, that you actually want it to be not what you're seeing. There's actually a person who's Dan Lekav Sechus is actually hoping. Every time they see someone doing something that's not right, they're actually hoping that that's not what it appears to be. That's not a feeling I get very often. When I see somebody doing something annoying, wrong, so I don't feel this thing welling up in me and saying, oh, I hope that's not really what they're doing. We're very good, by the way, at looking around the room and noticing what's wrong with almost everybody. We have such incredibly low self-esteem that, face it, Rabosai, it's painful for us to look at anyone and think that they're perfect. Immediately, when I can find something wrong in any, it's comforting, because they're also got a problem. There's nobody perfect in this room. Unfortunately, we do it sometimes to those we could even look up to. It ruins our ability of Aseh Lecha Rav and Kneh Lecha Chaver. But at the root is a desire that I don't want anyone to do anything wrong. I don't want anyone to be wrong. I want everyone to be perfect. We just don't feel that way. Being Dan Lekav Sechus means hoping that everybody's perfect. And I don't think that's something that we do. And there's one more reason that we're Dan Lekav Sechus, that we're not Dan Lekav Sechus. And for me, I know, while this is an area that I'm not particularly good at, I know that this method is very important for me. The final reason probably we're not Dan Lekav Sechus is because being Dan Lekav Sechus is ridiculous. Come on! The guy walks into McDonald's, he walks out eating something, so... What exactly are we asked to do when we're Dan Lekav Sechus? I didn't get an invitation. That guy wasn't so nice to me. This is my shul head going here. I didn't get an invitation to the Simcha. It's not like someone, not my best friend didn't send me an invitation. A guy who looked at me funny in shul didn't send me an invitation. So I have a hunch that they're trying to get me and they're not going to do it. And it sounds silly, but we all do it on some level. So the question is, what is it that Chazal are asking of us? How am I supposed to, why am I supposed to suspend my imagination, suspend the truth, just so that I can judge this? But it's not true, come on. It's a 99% chance that that's what really happened. There's a 1%, come on, if you want me to think of some crazy cat, okay. Why do they ask us to do that? So I would make the following suggestion, and please consider this. That Chazal are asking us to consider the 1% because I'm no better knowing the truth. If the guy did walk into McDonald's, and he's not my son's Rebbe, he's a guy, somebody I know, and he did walk into the McDonald's, and he did eat treif. Why am I a better person because I know that? Does that make me a bigger Talmid Chacham? Does that make me more of a Yiras Shamayim? He did go. So why is that important to me? Of course we have to know, if I saw a guy steal, I think I saw him stealing. Maybe I shouldn't let him stay alone in my house. But 9 out of 10 times when we see someone doing something and we're being asked, think of the 1%. Think of how it cannot be true. You know why we're asked? I believe because it doesn't matter if it's true. We don't need to know everything. We don't need to know the bad stuff that everybody's doing. And especially, we don't need to know the bad stuff other people are doing to us. So I didn't get invited. So the person did seem to slight me. So I heard that the person did say something bad about me. Does that help me? Am I happier? Is the truth so important to always know? So I go with the 1%. I say, you know what, maybe, come on, I know it's not true, but it helps me to let go. It helps me not to spend my precious time on it. Being Dan Lekav Sechus is the most helpful thing we can do for ourselves, not for anybody else. Why not? Why not stop thinking bad about everyone? What do we lose by thinking that everything's rosy? Are we going to be too naive? Halavai, that should be the problem. Halavai, we should not be able to guard ourselves anymore. That's not the extreme that we're worried about. It's very important, I believe, Rabosai, and I get a chance to speak to so many of you, and I enjoy speaking to so many of you. It's very important that we try to be Dan Lekav Sechus. Our yeshiva, bless it, occasionally has a little bit of hack going on. Occasionally, I understand, talking about this thing, I've never heard it myself, but other people tell me that occasionally there's a bit of a hack, a thing, this thing, ooh, what's going on over there? There are times where I've wondered, Rabosai, if we're always careful enough within the yeshiva about Lashon Hara. Is everything that goes on in the yeshiva, as long as it's yeshiva politics, as long as it's yeshiva related, is it necessarily not Lashon Hara? Can we say anything about the yeshiva or the people in the yeshiva? Is that really Latoelis, or is it the Hak? And more importantly, are we better people because of it? Nobody's perfect, Rabosai. And the yeshiva sometimes is not perfect. And there are no people in the yeshiva that are perfect. But are we really better thinking about that? Are we really better putting down? Are we really better kvetching? Are we really better noticing everything that's wrong? Is more Torah learned in this base medrash? Because we sometimes notice there's something that's not perfect in the yeshiva. That's what I want to know. And I know that I annoy people sometimes when they come over to me with an issue and I say, are more people learning Torah or less people learning Torah because of that? I'm not such a Talmud Chacham, I'm not such a Masmid. But I'm trying not to care. Trying to let go. Perhaps it's because I was out of the yeshiva for a while that I feel so strongly about this, having come back to the yeshiva 5 years ago. Having seen what sometimes is a little bit of a cynical, a critical, and to some extent it's fine. But does it help us? Does it get us anywhere? Or can we be not just more true to the halacha, but just happier? Just more focused on what we're supposed to be doing here. If we could try to imagine that maybe there are reasons why things go on. If we could try so hard to believe that maybe everyone here does mean well. And most importantly, even if we know it's not always true, if we could let go. Let go and focus on learning, on hasmada, on growing in our midos and growing in our Torah and the things that we're supposed to be in the yeshiva for. There's so much of good stuff here. Don't get me wrong. There's so much of that. But perhaps there could be just a little bit more if we'd be willing to let go. Have a good night.